Hello, and welcome to another celebrity edition of Neil Meets, a chance for me to relive those glory days when I was talking to famous people on my lunchtime show. On today's programme, we're going to be meeting Emily Sandé. We'll be revisiting my chat with Roachford and Sophie Ellis-Bextor. But first, Mari Wilson and Matt Backer.
Across the crowded room, across an empty street, and if you're not alone, a trifle indiscreet, beneath a furrowed brow, on a beguiling face, a wink or a glance can tempt you to another place. Oh yes, the eyes have in the chamber of the soul, minutes pass to hours and rob you of your powers. Eyes have it, and it's out of your secrets you conceal, all will be revealed. We'll never ever let you go.
So if your soul is torn,
you don't need me to tell you how much I love that tune. Been playing it for ages. It's just my kind of music. It's The Eyes Have It. It's the current single from Matt Backer and Mari Wilson. And I'm not joined by just one. I've got both of them on the line now. Matt, Mari, hi. Very good afternoon to you.
Hello there.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us. Mari, we're going to start with you if you don't mind. Obviously, the Beehives and the 80s. You were one of the voices of the 80s. You've still been going throughout. You were Dusty Springfield. You've been busy over the years, haven't you?
Yeah, I've sort of kept busy. I've always liked playing live. I mean, that's kind of how it started. Because when I was working with Top Taylor, who wrote Just What I've Always Wanted and that, you know, I kept saying, I want to do gigs, you know. And he said, well, you're going to need a really big band to make this sound. Because the early stuff was all very Motown-y. I said, well, I'll have a big band then. big mistake. Anyone listening, don't ever do that, because I had to pay 11 people every week, you know, and we do gigs with John Otway and Wild Willie Barrett, and they were getting the same money. I think, hold on, there's two of them, there's 12 of us. So that, you know, but we had more fun. We did have more fun. But I've always played live. It's always been my thing, really. So that's why I've kept going, you know.
But again, you've been on stage as well, so you do like that. Not just playing live, but performing live in every way. I mean, you're in Taboo, Dusty the Musical, all this stuff. That works for you, is it? You're happier out of a studio?
Well, no, I like both. I love being in the studio. I mean, in fact, I was only in the studio yesterday because I've been writing some new songs because my last album was covers, and so this has got, my next one has to be original. And we were doing backing vocals yesterday, which I love doing, you know. I do love being in the studio, but I couldn't be an exclusively recording artist, you know, because I do love being on stage and chatting to the audience and that kind of thing. Because some artists don't. Carly Simon famously had terrible stage fright and didn't really like playing live, you know. But I don't have that problem.
That's the way
to
be. Matt, how about you? I mean, to be honest, you know, you've just worked with, again, you're the list of people that you've performed with, you've recorded with, you know, Rumour, Emmylou Harris, Elton John, Cher, Joe Cocker, Alice Cooper, Julian Lennon, ABC. I mean, people have heard you playing, whether they know it or not, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right. And I apologise, but I hope it wasn't too traumatic.
You are kidding. guitarists are always the most modest people, but you know, you are, the world of guitar players is full of greats and you're listed right up there with them. So I don't know how you get the knack. I don't know where it comes from. It's obviously just pure talent. But for you, are you a live performer or do you prefer the studio?
Just like Mary said, it's both. The one feeds the other. And it really wasn't until lockdown, when I was lucky enough to be able to keep working online, that I realized how much I missed it. I'd always sort of taken it for granted. But once that was taken away, then I realized I needed it, not just to make music with other people at the same time, but also to have an audience and to have that human exchange. And I do think the one feeds the other. Yeah. Because if I'm sitting down and working on my next jazz symphony, then the voice of experience says people will be heading off to the bar at this point. So it also helps the creative process, I think.
Fantastic. Now, you've got this new album out, Bacchanalia. There's obviously Mary is on there as well, but you've got one of my other favourites who we spoke to just a few weeks ago. You've got Lily Gonzalez on with you.
Oh, Lily, yes, that's right. I saw her on Sunday. And again, like all these people, we're old friends. We've worked together a long time. And it's just nice to be able to make music together.
So talk us through the rest of the album then. Obviously, this track is a fabulous track. Is it working its way through different genres, or how does it go?
Not really. It was called Bacchanalia because I used to be a wine connoisseur. I suppose I'm still a connoisseur. I just don't drink it anymore.
Fair enough.
But it was a collection of songs that I'd written, some of which I'd written when I was 15, and some which I'd written when I was recording them in 2016, 2017. And the idea was to do it as live as possible with people in the room. It was supposed to come out in 2020, and then it got upstaged.
Things happen, don't they? Things just happen. Yeah. You have got a whole string of live dates coming up later on in the year, the tour. Murray, you're out on tour with Level 42, supporting guest with Level 42.
Yeah, I was rather flattered, really, to do that. I mean, I know Mike Lindup, the keyboard player, and I did meet Mark King back in the 80s, but, you know, that's a long time ago. So yeah, that'll be fun, and I should imagine their audience is probably quite different to mine, so it'll be a kind of different, I think, maybe a different demographic. I don't know. It'll be interesting, you know. And Matt's doing that with me, which is great. And then on the 8th of December, I've got my my Christmas show, which I'm doing at Islington Assembly Hall with the new Will Sations. So once again, there's going to be, you know, I don't know, 12 of us on stage or something like that.
Do I have to wear my elf suit again?
Yes, you do. Or you have to wear something red at least. Yeah. Right. Yes, I haven't told everyone that yet. I don't know how they're going to take it. But because I did have a gig again in the Christmas of the pandemic, and it was such a shame because I was so excited about it, and then it didn't happen. And then it didn't happen last year. Anyway, it's happening this year.
It'll happen this year.
And I tell you what else I've got is Cherry Red are releasing my back catalogue, my sort of on, because Show People isn't on CD, my album from the 80s. So it will be now. So I think that's coming out around September or something.
Fantastic.
And then I've been writing new material. So I don't know when that'll be out, but we're still working on it.
I mean,
it's keeping me off the streets, Neil.
I was going to say, so many musicians. I mean, it's interesting you say, all right, you've got some new songs that you've been writing. Matt, you the same. So many musicians I've spoken to throughout the pandemic, the musicians always went, well, if only I had the time, I could write some more songs. And then you speak to them and you find that most of the pandemic, they were decorating the kitchen. But you both been pretty good at it. You've been good at writing songs and putting, shoulder to the wheel.
First year I was in the garden having a glass of rosé mainly. The first year, no, I didn't do much at all. We used to drive into London actually in lockdown, and it was the weirdest thing to see Oxford Circus and Regent Street. I've got photographs, nothing there, no cars, no people. That was, so I spent a lot of time doing things like that really. What about you, Matt? What did you do?
I spent a lot of time in the garden, got back into bike riding, but first lockdown, the weather was lovely. So yeah, it was nice to get out and about.
Yeah.
Discovered some of the lovely country lanes in Barnet. Second lockdown, not so much.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's just great to have it back. So in terms of more collaborations with the two of you then, I mean, obviously you've got the tour dates and things coming up. You've done this. Would you actually sit down, the two of you, and write an album or some singles now and go, right, let's concentrate, the two of us?
Well, Matt's never doing? Asked me, so we'll
all right. What are you doing next week?
There you go.
Yeah, next week. Yeah. I mean, we should really. I mean, we did a thing a few years ago for the Wrecking Crew film, which is about all the musicians that played on all those records in the 60s in California and stuff. And Matt and I did I Got You, Babe. The two of us, we were, we were the London Borough of Haringey, Sonny and Cher.
But you do great. Seem to just, well, obviously there's the production in the eyes have it, but you do just seem, your voices seem to complement each other, and it seems a very comfortable way that you're performing.
Yeah.
Well, I promised to...
I've known Matt for such a long time, and I absolutely love, he is my favourite guitarist. I love his playing. So, there are so many boxes ticked.
Do you accept euros? I can only pay you in euros at the moment.
What about Bitcoin?
No, I'm fine, thanks. We'll steer away from them. But it is great. And yes, if you do get that album together, can you have it as based on an idea by Neil Whiteside? Because I just think there is a market for this as well. It's lovely to hear professional singers, professional musicians bringing proper music out. And you play it, it's timeless.
Yeah. It's a good song. He's good, isn't he?
He is. Very good indeed. It's been great to meet you both.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see you on tour. You're getting as near to us as Northampton, but that's worth a car journey. And the rest of the album and everything, and new music from you, we're loving it. But for now, Mary Wilson, Matt Backer, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much, Neil. Okay.
Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Stop hiding it away. Come on.
I tell you, that song always puts the hairs on my arm up, even more so, and I've actually got clammy hands as well, because I have Emily Sandé on the line as that was going out. Emily, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
That's okay. That's one heck of a song. And if you'll excuse me saying so as well, Danny from The Script and Bo Bruce did it on The Voice. And it's just a wonderful song, that. What's the story behind it?
Well, the first time I sang the song was with Professor Green. It was his single. Mm. And I just signed to Virgin. So he took quite a risk in asking me to do the hook on it. And it went to number one. That was my first time ever being at number one with him. And, you know, we got to sing on The X Factor. It was really wonderful. And then my A&R at the time, Glenn Akins, asked me to do my own version. He said, we'd love to hear what you would say on the verses. And because Professor Green had really gone so deep and so personal on what he had said in the original, it really inspired me to do the same. And it's just amazing what, you know, that part three version of the song has done and meant to people. Even now, what, 10, 11 years later, it still really seems to resonate.
Yeah, you say 10, 11 years later. I always think of you as being around for a couple of years. You know, you always sound very fresh and very current. It's always like, oh, it's the new single from Emily Sandé. It's the new album. And I just think you're so there. But as you say, look back, and it's crikey. Forgive me, you've been around for a while. And boy, have you racked up some stuff. I've just been through your Wikipedia page. Best-selling album of 2012 in the UK, over a million sales. The opening and closing ceremonies of the London Olympics, you've performed at both of those. 4 Brit Awards, is it now? I think something like that. Oh, and by the way, an MBE. So, again, reading up on you, you knew from a very early age that you wanted to do this. You're clearly a classic example of, if you're talented and you work hard, you can do it, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to face that there will be difficult moments, there will be moments of rejection, and when it does get tough. But I think if you really believe in your passion and you believe that you'll work very hard to achieve it, I do think anything's possible if you're willing to take the lows with the highs. I think it can be a wonderful journey.
But when you look back at how it all started for you, I mean, again, the story is that you wrote your first song at 11, but I mean, whereas most of us would have written a song about something we like for dinner or something like that, yours was a properly formed song, had a middle eight and everything, so you clearly understand. And your parents spotted you, didn't they? They parental support must be key.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my dad introduced me to many of the greats, you know, a lot of very powerful, intelligent women. So he really set the bar quite high. He said, okay, this is Nina Simone. This is how you should approach writing a song. And this is, you know, Aretha Franklin and Celine Dion. And so from the very beginning, it was quite clear to me, well, from what I was being introduced to, that, you know, you should have a message and you should be reflecting your times and you should be saying something quite meaningful. So I think as a kid, yeah, I was writing very serious songs, perhaps a bit earlier than I should have been.
But as you say, listing your influences, as you say, Nina Simone, Joni Mitchell, okay, that ties in with what you said, but then Lauryn Hill and Amy Winehouse, and that's what keeps you fresh and current, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think with music, you know, especially pop music, that's the beauty of it. It's trying to reflect, well, what's 2022, and you can have the same messages as you may have had 10 years ago, but that's the challenge. How do you keep it fresh? How do you make sure that you are kind of exciting the ears of people? And that's what I've really loved on this album, particularly how to get the production to a point where it's empowering and amplifying what you're trying to say, not getting in the way of it.
So we have this new album out, which is, let's say, for instance, which came out just in May. You've worked with so many great people over the nearly decades, I'm going to say, sorry, but the likes of Naughty Boy and all those people. Does that help to keep it fresh as well, and to help you to aim for what you're looking to achieve? Because you've got, 16 tracks on here. That's a good album's worth, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I love collaboration, and throughout my career I have done a lot of it. And I think as soon as you get in a room with another artist, suddenly you have all of their world as well, all their experience, and you have all of yours. So you can just kind of, you know, inspire one another in that sense. And yeah, there was a lot of music. I mean, I think there was about 60 songs that we had to whittle it down to. I said, can't we do a double or triple album? And I was advised that probably wouldn't be a wise idea. But Yeah, it is. I really wanted this album to tell a story, and that's what helped to get it down to the 16, because I wanted to make sure each song had its very own unique, distinctive message.
But you're one of these people who strikes me as you've permanently got ideas for songs going around in your head. You're probably either talking into a voice recorder or writing down little chord sequences or something like that. So what happens to those 46 songs that didn't make the cut this time? Because you're going to be like Prince, aren't you? There's going to be a day when they go, oh, well, we just found this vault and there's 4,000 Emily Sandé songs here we can read. What do you do with them? Do you keep them back or do they get consigned to the vault?
Yeah, there's definitely an ever-growing vault going on, but I think usually it's nice to kind of review a song years later or maybe even months later and just kind of hear it with new ears, because when you're in the process of writing an album, sometimes you can lose perspective because you've really got a microscope on everything. So usually I'll go back and listen to it a few months later, see if there's a way I can adjust it, make it current to now. But then, yeah, sadly, a lot of it does get forgotten and it's just kind of on your iTunes on your computer. And then, you know, hopefully sometimes artists come along that hear it and it works for them. You know, perhaps it wasn't right for my album, but it speaks to them in a different way and we can kind of tweak it to be more suitable for them. So I don't know. I think I'd love to give someone a job just to listen to all my voice memos, all my, you know, all the vault and see if I'm, like, missing any gems in there.
Well, that's a five-year job by the sound of it. I'd love someone to take that original. Do you still have that original song you wrote? Do you have it, just even a rough idea of it still somewhere?
I think we might have recorded it on cassette somewhere. To be honest, it could be quite a cool experiment going back and recording it now and seeing if it could still work.
Wouldn't it? I bet you make a really fantastic job of it. And of course, all this, you're doing all this, and of course, you're on tour as well. And it's not just your local pubs and clubs, is it? It's a UK and Europe tour. Is that a good bit for you? Do you like that, or is that a necessary evil?
No, I really love it. I think it's really important to get that balance, because too long in the studio, you can kind of lose your mind. And then too long on tour can become quite physically exhausting. So I think you have to have that perfect balance of making the music and then presenting it to the people, then going back to your cave, making more music. I love the kind of cycle of it.
But do you ever actually put your feet up and rest, or are you one of these nightmare people who, if you're not doing one thing, you've got to be doing the other?
No, I do like to chill out, definitely, and, you know, watch TV and spend time with my partner, with my family. It's important. I think that's the biggest lesson for me the past couple of years, is you have to take time to rejuvenate yourself. Otherwise, you will completely burn out and you'll lose perspective and meaning of what you're doing. So I definitely try to schedule in a lot of recuperation time.
good for you. Now, just one final question then. So going back to that little girl who decided at the age of 11 to write a song and that this is what she wanted to do, if you could go back in time and have a gentle whisper in her ear and say, well, you are going to get 4 Brit Awards and you are going to get an MBE and your first album will be the best-selling album of 2012, and what would you just say, just do it, or would you go, actually, no, it's a nightmare, don't go near it? What would your advice to young you be?
I probably just tell her to, like, take your time, and also there are no rules. I think that's a bit of a, you know, problem sometimes. We enter an industry where we think there are rules, and I think I would have said, keep doing your jazzy stuff, keep trying new genres, and never feel that you have to put yourself in a box. But I would have just been like, yeah, enjoy the ride, take time to enjoy it and appreciate it.
Well, the thing is, if you enjoy the ride, we all get to enjoy it too, because we absolutely love your music. I have shown you firsthand the hairs on my arm sticking up while you were singing Read All About It in my left ear. Emily, it's been a joy to meet you, and thank you for that. Good luck with the new album, good luck with the tour, enjoy the tour. I've just back from Germany and I think you're going that way soon. The weather's lovely over there. Emily Sandé, thank you so much for joining me today.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
How do we let this go on for so long? Everyone says the writing's on the wall. When we gonna do better? What if we cross the line and gone too far? I wanna believe this isn't who we are. How we gonna do better? You know we gotta do better. We are stronger together, so let's not give up. Now's the time we should be fighting for what we got. Let's hold on if you believe that we only love. Now's the time, now's the time, 'cause it won't be long till the hope has gone. No, it won't be long, no, it won't be long till the love has gone. What do we really feel we're living for? Do we just wanna keep on starting wars? When we gonna do better? Isn't it time to heal and time to change? Or tomorrow will be like yesterday? When we gonna do better? We really gonna do better? We are stronger together, so let's not give up. Now's the time we should be fighting for what we got. Let's hold on if you believe that we only love. Now's the time, now's the time, 'cause it won't be long till the hope has gone. And to be as one is where we are strong. Let's put the hurt and these guns aside, so the fear goes down and the hope will rise. Let's put the hurt and the guns aside, so the fear goes down and the hope will rise. 'Cause it won't be long till the love has gone. No, it won't be long, no, it won't be long. No, it won't be long till the hope has gone. And to be as one is where we are strong. The hurt and the guns aside, so the fear goes down and the hope will rise. Let's put the hurt and the guns aside, so the fear goes down and the hope will rise. 'Cause it won't be long, no, it won't be long, no, it won't be long.
Well, there we go. Isn't that a great track? It's the current single from Roachford. It's called Better. It's off the digital repackage of Twice in a Lifetime, an album which came out a couple of years ago, which features Beverly Knight on it and some of Amy Winehouse's band, and more importantly, Andrew Roachford himself, who joins me on the line. Andrew, good afternoon.
Hey, hey, how you doing, man?
Very good, very good. Great to meet you, Art. I mean, yeah, it's a career that stretches back, isn't it?
It does, it does. It's a proper one. You know, I mean... I've been singing and playing all my life, and obviously the late 80s was when it started to get on the radio.
But
I haven't looked back.
No, and I say it with such casual aplomb, but it's a career that spans so many different styles of music, so many different genres, and so many different ways. I mean, when you first started, did you ever think, right, this is it, this is going to be the next 30, 40 years of my life?
No, I don't know. I was just so involved in what I was doing, and my passion is music, and so I was already kind of at a place that I knew was my life, but I didn't think about a level of popularity and fame and how that would figure and that stuff. I mean, I always knew I'd be playing and performing music, but you know, it took to another level once you started getting stuff played on the radio.
Oh, I mean, there's getting stuff played on the radio, and then there's getting stuff played on the radio like Cuddly Toy, which we opened the show with today, and he's still absolute mainstream, isn't it? Is that a curse or a blessing when you get a track like that? This is going to be a stupid question, I'm guessing, but I mean...
Well, it's not a stupid question, because you know, I often tour and I'll see some bands turn up at the hotel and they look like they're doing the worst job on the planet. They're so sort of miserable and cynical. I mean, I won't mention any names, but and I just think it's got to be a blessing, hasn't it? I mean, hello, you know, loads of people went out and supported you, bought your record, and then started coming to your gigs. It can't be a curse. I mean, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah, fair point.
You know, and a song that's still, you know, a Cuddly Toy is there's even not a day goes by that I don't turn on the radio and hear it on some station somewhere. And you know, never dreamed that song would be still going and I would still be playing it at this point in my life. But it's amazing.
And at this point, I am going to fess up to something. I'm sure you're aware that Alan Partridge used it on the Norwich Ring Road. He was driving around the Norwich Ring Road at the start of one of his films. And he's got his driving gloves on and he's pointing out, like, you've got your fog lights on. And I live in Norwich. When I drive around the Ring Road, there's a little bit of me every time goes, you've got your fog lights on. And it is a fantastic track. You, some bands like take that, they form, then they go off and have their solo careers, and then they're back together again. But you did it slightly different, because you went solo in 2003, but when you came back, you joined Mike and the Mechanics.
Well, you know, people say come back, but I'm always doing what I'm doing, and I've always been gigging. I haven't really stopped, and it's not that I went away. It's almost like, you know, when the media is paying your attention and then they're not, it looks like you're sort of phasing in and out, but I've always been doing it.
Sure.
And, you know, when I signed to CBS, I signed a 7-album deal, but I actually signed as a solo artist. And then I went out and started touring with my band and we became a band. So then eventually I went back to working with other people. So it was me again, I guess. And then eventually, yeah, I got the phone call from Mike Rutherford to do some writing, and that was how the Mike and the Mechanics thing started. Was I was sort of writing some tracks with him to work on an album, and then it became this bigger thing, and then we started touring it. And 12 years down the line, I'm still, you know, between Rochefort touring, I'm doing Mike and Mechanics touring, and recording. I've been done a couple of albums now with Mike, and it's very surreal.
Okay, man. I mean, I've got to say, on your own Wikipedia page, it says that Mike Rutherford's comment was, so we have a guy called Andrew Rochford, an R&B kind of singer. It's a little different, but the soul seems to be there. Did you take him off to one side at that point and go, do you know who I am?
You know what? I never read Wikipedia, so I've not heard that one before. But actually, what was great about it was that Mike was looking for someone that could, you know, because the Mechanics traditionally rock pop, but also had that soul edge with Paul Carrack, and he was like, well, who can span those genres? And my name kept coming up, and of course he knew who I was and everything. But I think even he wondered how it was going to work. But as soon as we got in the studio together, started making music, it was a no-brainer for him. It was just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, and he's come to my gigs, and he's a fan. It's the same way I'm a fan of his, and we both got something different from it, you know. And when he first, because we do Cuddly Toy as well live with Mechanics, and when he first started playing it, he looked at me and went, this is something different. You know, but he didn't say it in a sort of like, he said it in a wow kind of like,
yeah,
you know, he's an artist, and so he wanted to explore that. And so, yeah, I think we've both got
it is a marriage made in heaven, really, isn't it? Because you're right, you come from slightly different worlds, but it works so well. You both got things to bring to the party, and that's really what works.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, if you come again, the gigs are sort of the truth. You come to the gigs, and I remember the first gig I did fronting Mike's Mechanics, I could see the audience were like, how's this going to work? I could see the skepticism was a bit there, but then once the gig gets started, people quickly realised that it was its own thing, and it wasn't trying to be something. It was its own thing.
Well, I'm very excited. Talking of gigging, I'm very excited for Sunday, because you're currently in the middle of a UK tour. You're doing Norwich Waterfront on Sunday. And for me, it's a double whammy, because you've got President Street supporting you, and we've been playing their music for the past couple of years. Good to be back out on the road. Stupid question again, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? It's great for... I mean, you know, I feel blessed that I have fans that held onto their tickets for so long, because it was like, this is a gig that's sort of 2.5 years in the making. It's that late, you know. And there's the thing about being late for a gig, but this is ridiculous. You know, so you see it because we've just been playing in Scotland, we've been doing Europe, and you can see the audience have just been, they're just so ready for it, understatement, you know. But it's actually incredible, the reaction that you get now, because you know when you get that taken away from you, the fact you can't go to gigs and you can't go out, you can't socialise, you can see how people are just being gagging for it.
Oh, absolutely! I really can't wait for Sunday. And finally, of course, today the Queen's birthday honours are announced. Lots of people getting their new gongs, and you, of course, are. I should have doffed the cap a little bit and said, you know, Andrew Roachford MBE when I introduced you. How does it feel when you get that letter through the post?
When you get that letter through the, I mean, I looked at the letter about five times because I thought, I'm not quite understanding what I'm seeing here, you know, because it was like a request. Would you accept this MBE on? And I was just like, wow, this is what? Okay, you know, and then finally going to the palace, which was just before the lockdown, just before the pandemic really hit, and you know, I was with my brother and my mom and my cousin, and you know, it was a really sunny day and it was quite special just driving up there. And that, you know, we turned on the radio and my then single Love Remedy was on the radio as we drove in, and it was a very special moment, you know. And sadly I lost my brother after that, but I feel we shared that moment where, yeah, it was,
I was gonna say, that's the better of the two ways round, isn't it? He was there for you, there with you for that.
Yeah, no, that was supposed to, I felt like it was supposed to happen, and I was so honoured, and my mum was so sort of emotional about it, you know, as any mum would be.
Absolutely.
Who you know.
How proud could she be? You can't get any prouder, can you?
No, she was bursting and with the pride, and you know, even though she was freezing because they turned down the heat in Buckingham Palace, so she literally was just shivering but smiling at the same time.
Bless her, fantastic. And then of course, obviously, just finally, the single is out now. There's a repackaged version of Twice in a Lifetime, mixed by Ash Howes, and he's kind of the go-to guy at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he has been for a while. I mean, we got introduced through some people, and I didn't really know that much about him some years back, but he did a lot, he did most of the tracks on my album. And, you know, now that I work with him, he is my go-to person. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of tracks that have been mixed and set by a guy called Michael Brower. And actually, Michael Brower mixed Cuddly Toy back in the day on my whole first album. And that was like, I've not heard or spoken to him in so many years. And so that was like a return. It felt quite, again, quite poignant. And he's amazing. He does all the Coldplay stuff. And at the time when I was putting his name into the hat, the record company were like, well, what's he done? And at the time, he just mixed, I'll Be Riding Shotgun. And it was just this song that was everywhere. And they went, fair play. You know, yeah, fair play. He's obviously still relevant. And yeah, he's so between him and Ash, they're the two best you can get. I mean, you know.
Well, I think it's going to be a great... I'm looking forward... I haven't heard the old album yet. We're going to play what we had, you and Beverly Knight. We're going to play that after the ad break, which is coming up. But I'm really looking forward to playing the whole album all the way through. But that's sort of with a glass of wine and after a nice dinner type. You know, it's that sort definitely. Of album. It's that sort of album, isn't it?
definitely.
Well, listen, it's been great to meet you. I'm looking so looking forward to the gig on Sunday. Have a great bank holiday. Are you doing anything grand? Are you out street partying?
Well, I'm coming to see you guys. So that's number one.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see you Sunday evening. I'll let you get on and enjoy the rest of your weekend. But for now, Andrew Roach, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Cheers.
Cambridge 105 Radio. You always knew how to creep into my head, always finding ways to sleep in my bed. You have always kept me hypnotized. You will never have the key to my heart. Pay attention to the things that I said. I had told you I was sick of crying when you gave me promises of paradise, then took them back again before my eyes. Here we go at it again. You see, this position is not for me, and it just wasn't meant. Decision is mine to leave you, so I've grown so tired of the mind games you play. So warm in the night, yet so cold in the day. You always knew how to creep into my head, always finding ways to sleep in my bed. You have always kept me hypnotized. You will never have the key to my heart. Pay attention.
creep into my head, always finding ways to sleep in my bed. You have always kept me hypnotized. You will never have the key to my heart. Pay attention to the things that I said. I had told you I was sick of crying when you gave me promises of paradise, then took them back again before my eyes. You always knew how to creep into my head, always finding ways to sleep in my bed. You have always kept me hypnotized.
Well, there we go. It's sitting pretty on the Cambridge 105 radio playlist. It's the current single from Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Hypnotised, or Hypnotised. And I've got her on the line to have a bit of a chat about that. Sophie joins me. Sophie, hi.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Now, listen, across Cambridge, Sophie, academics and learned people are going, it's Hypnotised, woman. It really catches the imagination, holds the song title in people's heads, doesn't it?
Well, the song is definitely called Hypnotised, if that suits the academics. but yeah, when it comes to singing it and you want it to rhyme with bed and head, then you have to do Hypnotised.
Indeed, indeed. Described by yourself as my favourite kind of wonky pop song. Is that what attracts you? Something a little bit different?
Definitely. I think I always like pop songs where you kind of feel a bit like, oh, what just happened, you know? And it's a bit like going on waltzes or something. It definitely appeals to my pop sensibilities when it's like that. So, yeah, this has been a really fun track to be part of, definitely.
And when you went into the studio, did you, had it all been worked out as to exactly how this was going to do, or did you riff it a bit and wait till you got there?
Well, I worked with the producers called Wo-O, and he's a talented songwriter, Glaswegian producer, and he had a lot of the track already done, but I had a few little ideas, and we just sort of collaborated, finished the track off. I think, you know, it's, whenever I come and do something, particularly if it's a song that's already kind of, you know, got like its framework in place, then for me it's just about, you know, making sure it sounds like it should be me singing it rather than someone else. So it's always nice to kind of try and find your stamp, really. But Pete was a lovely person to work with, and I hope we do more together because he's very talented.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he said himself, he said, you know, I'd basically, it was all done. The song pretty much existed. Then Sophie sang it with her iconic voice. The track was suddenly taken to a whole new level. That's kind of what happened with Spiller and Groovejet as well, wasn't it? You got your hands on it, and away it went.
Well, actually, Groovejet was a little different, only because I actually co-wrote that one. So that song, when I first met it, didn't have anything on it. It was
right.
It was just instrumental. So that actually was the first song I ever co-wrote that was released, because I'd been in a band before that where I wasn't at all interested in songwriting. So Groovejet was like a big old adventure in every sense of the word, actually. And it's something, you know, that I still sing now, like 22 years later, which is kind of barking.
Well, I was doing my research, because you don't speak to somebody like you without at least looking a few things up on the internet. And one thing I didn't realise was Groovejet was the first song ever to be played on an iPod anywhere. They played it on a prototype unit in August 2001.
That's literally the only fact about any of my songs that any of my kids have been impressed with. yeah. I should probably put it on a T-shirt or something, because I think that is probably the coolest thing about me. And
oh, I don't know. I mean, you must be labelled by you. Even your kids must accept you're cool, because you are one of these people. You are a jack of so many trades and master of all of them, it would seem. I mean, you are the definition of the old phrase, if you want something done, give it to a busy person, aren't you?
Well, you know what? I've been really enjoying myself, and I've always loved what I do, but I think particularly the last few years, I'm sort of as much in love with my day job as ever, really. And it's been just an amazing summer and lots of blue skies and sunshine and happy crowds in the open air. So it's been really lovely. I've been really having a nice time.
Well, that is so nice. I mean, one thing as well, throughout the pandemic, you kept us entertained is an understatement, with the Kitchen Disco. Now, so many people, so many songwriters we spoke to, it was a case of either they did sit down and write all those songs they'd promised they would write if they had the time, or they decorated the kitchen. But nobody ever took your approach to it of, actually, I'm going to do all this stuff, I'm going to do it in the kitchen.
Well, funnily enough, when lockdown first started, you know, Richard, who's also a musician, my husband, we both felt completely discombobulated. Our diaries were empty. And I didn't find it creative at all. I was like, I don't know how to do anything like this. Like, it was like my brain seized up. But music was really the saviour, because we thought, well, let's just have some fun and do something a bit silly. So the Kitchen Discos really came out of our need to find something to distract ourselves. And then once we had a little community out of it, it was just really special. So it kind of saved us, really.
Well, it saved me as well, because I have to say yours was the favourite. My favourite single of 2020 was Crying at the Discotheque. I absolutely love that tune. Absolutely love it.
It's a top tune.
It is. It's a great one. Coming back to Hypnotise then, it says here, forthcoming album?
Yeah, so I've been working on another album with a singer-songwriter called Ed Harcourt. So this is our third record together. So we did Wanderlust and then an album called Familia, and now this one, which is just being mixed at the moment. And I'm really happy with it. It sounded exactly how I want it to sound. And I don't know, it's going to come out next year. It's not a disco record, but it's definitely got some pop moments in there. And I don't know, I just really felt like this was the album I needed to make next.
Well,
I'm quite an instinctive person, really.
Well, and it's stood you in good stead over the years. And I say over the years, when you sit and look at it, read my lips, my dear girl, 21 years ago that was.
I know, isn't that crazy? It's bonkers. It really is. And it's like, it just kind of creeps up on you a little bit, but I'm very much aware of it and I really like it. It's like there's something really lovely about looking back and it's suddenly like, oh, actually, I've been doing what I do for a little while now and it feels really nice.
But some people feel still sort of quite nervous about it. I know Elton John's been saying this about Britney Spears lately, that she sort of, you know, she needed validating that, yes, actually. You can. Are you past that point now? 20 years in, you know what you can do and you know what you're on about.
Well, I think with someone like Britney and all she's experienced, I think it would be foolish of me to compare myself, really. But I think certainly from my point of view, I feel very much like, I'm 43. I love what I do. I've kind of like, there's a lot of things that fall by the wayside, like, you know, worrying what people think. And I certainly think that thing of, you know, worrying about relevance, that's so much part of the beginning of my career, because, you know, you feel very, you know, judged and you're sort of putting yourself out there and everybody's a bit like, well, who are you and why are you here?
Yeah.
But at this point, it's a bit more like, I just love what I'm doing. I'm happy to keep working. I love doing the gigs, I'm still excited and a bit challenged by what I do, and that just feels really lovely. So I'm happy just sort of tootling along my own path, really.
Is there anything left on the tick on the bucket list that you want to do? Is there still, you know, being a James Bond film or something like that you want to do?
I sort of hope so, really. I mean, I think, you know, whenever I've found myself getting anywhere near something predictable, I tend to pull the rug out from under me anyway. And you know, in the last couple of years, there's been a few things that we've done that I've never done before. I've got my podcast that I adore doing. I, you know, did my dance-a-thon last year. Richard and I just done a cookbook, but we're still sort of bringing new things to the table. And I think it's nice to learn new skills and still be a little bit scared about things sometimes. I'm quite into that feeling, really.
You've obviously got that from your mum as a former Blue Peter presenter. She's obviously been chucked in at the deep end more times than she can count.
It's true, actually. Well, she used to jump out of planes when she was on Blue Peter, so she's kind of the original, and she took it further than I ever would, so she's been great.
Yeah, well, it's always good to have somebody like that. Always good to have your mum on your side, and especially when she's got that depth of experience as well.
Exactly.
Well, listen, Sophie, it's been lovely to catch up with you. Welcome back to Cambridge 105. I know that Tim and Liz will send their love to you, and keep us entertained as you've been doing throughout the pandemic. Thank you for that. We look forward to the new album. You're touring at the moment, but for now, we'll content ourselves with Hypnotised, which is a great track doing well on our playlist. Sophie Ellis-Bextor, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. It was lovely to talk to you.
And that's it for this celebrity edition of Neil Meets. My thanks to my guests, Mari Wilson, Emily Sande, Roachford and Sophie Ellis-Bextor. And to you for listening. And until next time, from me, Neil Whiteside, it's bye for now.